fields of bodies burning as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Hi, this is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news.
And I'm Dan Dugan, the other guy on the other side. WGRN, the Green Renaissance.
This is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news. You're listening to WGRN 94.1 and WCRS 92.7 and 98.3. Non-commercial, listener-supported community radio. And I'm in the studio with Marilyn Howard, who is an expert on Black history. She teaches Black studies at Columbus State Community College. She's done tremendous work in this area and has to be confronted with the question, why is there a plethora of blackface going on?
Is this the wackiest week in politics you've ever seen in your life? I mean, I don't know what to say, but you do know that the top two public officials, state officials in Virginia, are you know, trying to figure out should they resign or not. And then then the other guy has been, the third guy, he's been accused, he's by two women now, of not sexual harassment, but sexual
assault.
And so if the three of them quit, they're all Democrats, the next person in line is a Republican. And black
and
people in Virginia
expected the Republican to do the blackface, but
yes.
No.
Yes.
I mean, the first guy accused of it, the
governor. And he
black
he,
moderate.
Bless his heart. He
well, blackface moderate.
He can't get it right. You know, now they've given him a list of stuff to read, you know, books to read, roots, that kind of, seriously.
That's pretty 1970s.
Yeah. So you can, you know, come up to speed on this. Now, here's the thing. You know, Virginia is the cradle of the Confederacy. It is where blacks in bondage were first brought to America. Now, the thing
and
is...
Isn't it the 400th anniversary?
Of Jamestown.
Well, the first trip.
Now, here's
slave ship showing up.
Yeah, here's the thing here. We really don't 100% sure know if they were slaves or indentured servants. Some of them were treated like indentures. Some of them got sucked into slavery. Well, he was told...
Well, we know the law developed out of indentured servitude.
And it developed in Virginia.
A life, yeah, mm-hmm. It sure did. Kind of tobacco
from
row.
The evil weed. Yeah. Yes. From the 1620s up to about 1670, that's the point.
But really, it was a court decision to take a black indentured servant. And as I recall, two
white guys who ran away with him. They got 1 year, he got life. Already a prejudiced criminal
and
justice
then,
system.
And then the legal question arose, what about his child? When he was an indentured servant for life and he had a child,
who
what
was
does that mean?
Care, yeah.
And the court, in its infinite confusion, argued, well, if the father's a life indentured servant, so must be the child.
Well, and,
talk about the sins of the parents.
And they switched that later so that the child took the condition of the mother. Now, you could be a free black man married to an enslaved black woman and have a child, and that child will be a slave. So you take the condition of the mother. Now, here's the thing. If you are an enslaved black woman who has been sexually victimized by a white man...
Maybe your master.
Maybe
Thomas
son,
Jefferson's father-in-law.
Whatever. But here's the thing. That if the child takes the condition of the mother, this is just another slave to the white man who's his father. It literally allows white men to walk away from their children, something that black men have always been criticized for.
But in many cases, some of those children didn't look overly
well.
There was a whole lot of miscegenation going on. And it wasn't the black woman who had the power in that relationship.
No, it wasn't. And you know, this is when in the early 18th century, we get this definition of the one drop rule. It's in part a reaction to the international slave trade being canceled, as it says in the Constitution. You couldn't do anything about it before 1808. In the wake of the revolutionary.
So they gave it 20 years to import.
Yes. So that's kind of like a generation. We won't be here anymore. Let the next generation figure it out. But that, you know, because of that and because the northern states in the wake of the Revolutionary War started freeing their slaves either through legislation or compensating owners or whatever that. So if you can't go overseas and get more slaves where it's, you know, fast and cheap, how do you increase the slave population? Well, you can do natural increase, but you can also come up with some kind of formula or some kind of development or something that says who is black.
Just like John Yoo with torture. You simply redefine what constitutes a member of a race.
And, yes.
Mississippi, right? If you were 164th, that's one great, 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 great grandparent.
Yes. Like Senator Orne.
That's eight greats.
That's right. So, you know, but this blackface thing, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week. We know it, we can trace it back to the early 1830s in the North. Probably Thomas Rice, or Daddy Rice as he was called, was the most famous practitioner of that. But, you know, the whole idea was to dress like a black person. And particularly,
well, he actually, the story, T.D. bought the rags off a handicap, we now say, but a black slave who is physically handicapped bought his clothes to be authentic.
Oh, yes. Corked his face, you know, but and makes fun of black people.
And often made fun of black people.
For the enjoyment of white people.
Particularly Midwesterners who many of them had never encountered
a black person. So, you know, we can trace that way back to that.
And we can probably trace back why Indiana became such a wretched Klan-infested state.
Well, because they passed a law in 1848, said no more black people could move into Indiana. And you know, in southeast Indiana, extreme southeast Indiana, there are places where the black population is still less than 1%.
Oh, interesting. I'm talking to Dr. Marilyn Howard, who, because of her academic and scholarly work, would know. I think I went through a few of those towns in Indiana. I was in rural Indiana one time. And I got out, and I thought I was in the middle of Children of the Corn.
Yeah, and you look at where are the sundown towns. They're in the north. They're not in the south. They're in the north.
Yeah, well, not that long ago, London, Ohio got accused of it. And they're in kind of not the big cities.
Marysville, where the Honda plant is, allegedly was a sundown town. Ohio had quite a few of them.
And again, a lot of these... even in the last 30, 40 years, the signs go up unofficially at sundown.
Well, I have every class that I talk about this in, I always have at least one student who will talk about, you know, traveling or something and going to a town where the physical signs are still there. So I don't doubt that.
I saw one more than a decade ago in London as I was driving into London.
Well, Lancaster too was full of Klan. I have a great picture on the bulletin board outside my office.
Lancaster still might be full of neo-Nazis as well.
Yeah, you would know about that, wouldn't you? Didn't you do some...
there was a whole house full of them down there.
Yeah, you and the late Judy Gentry are a colleague.
That's right.
So you guys did one of the first papers, scholarly papers on that.
Yeah, on white supremacists in Ohio.
And how the internet was helping them to grow.
Yeah, the early...
But
hate on the information highway.
That's right. That's right. But here's the thing. Let's fast forward here to 2019. What is this? You know, the governor's whole thing was, he didn't, first off, he said, yeah, I'm in the picture. And then when he thought about it, he thought, oh, no, I couldn't, I'm not in the picture. It can't be me because I was somewhere else. But I did do blackface once before, and this was the day and all that kind of thing.
But that was Michael Jackson.
And he can moonwalk, too. What is, you know, the fact that it's 2019, okay, he was in med school in 1984. There's no way that you could be a white person and not know that that is insulting. That's the whole point of doing it. The whole point of doing it is to insult black people.
What about the argument that some of it, I mean, you know, culturally a Puritan society, Victorian overlays, is some of it is simply their own super egos or ids running wild, thinking I can express myself.
Well, yeah, there's part
person.
Of that. It's like in the 80s, you know, it's like the suburban white kids who buys most of the rap records, especially the really nasty ones.
The vast majority of the records here, right, were sold to suburban kids.
Yeah, but it's appropriation that you cultural appropriation that you can take off when it's time to go to grandma's house. You can pull up your pants, put on a belt, put on some decent shoes, take your baseball cap off, and you're done with it. So this is something that they can put on and take off. You can have a little fun with it, and then you put it away. So this thing about I didn't know that, you know, it was a hurtful thing. I'm being educated. Now I know, and I would never do it again. And, you know, he's got this reading list, and
But they thought they was NWA.
Yeah.
straight out of UA.
And I'm going to tell you how that works.
Comes a brother named Tyler.
Yeah, I'll tell you how that works. There was a guy who lived across the street from the house I grew up in. I went back home when I went to graduate school and had that very small fellowship. And when I was, I grew up on the west side on the hilltop. And strict segregation, 678 streets, all black, 678 streets, white. Further west you go, the whiter it got. There was a white family across the street from us. That young man had all of the foulest, the most misogynist, the most anti-authoritarian rap, you know, turned up to warp 12, and he would not speak to me. So I sort of made it my mission to get him to speak, and I finally did one day. Yeah, you can appropriate our culture.
You told him he was pretty fly for a white guy.
You're pretty fly for a white guy. But you can appropriate the culture, but you don't want to have anything to do with black people. Where do you draw the line? And the other thing we have to think about here is what are the standards we're going to use in terms of punishing and rehabilitating these white people who are now outing themselves about blackface? I mean, what do you do? Do you let it go? Do you fire some people? Some people are saying you keep the governor of Virginia because he's been pretty clued into the black community and he's done a lot of good stuff, but the attorney general has to go or vice versa, or the lieutenant governor should go. Where do we draw the line? And why is the onus of so-called forgiveness on the people who are being oppressed?
Great question, Dr. Marilyn Howard. You're listening to WGRN 94.1 and WCRS 92.7 and 98.3. A lot of stuff happening out there, including weirdness with blackface. And not only do you have those questions, who gets forgiven, what about those two police officers going undercover
in a black neighborhood to sell drugs to black people? There's a picture. It's in the.
They got dressed in blackface.
Well, they don't have cork. You can tell it's something that's not really
That's upsetting. That is the CIA's job. Does the CIA know they're
stepping on their territory?
Yeah.
But
they are
in this picture. And this was a sting operation that was put together by the department. And so
Why's that white guy got shoe polish on?
Yeah, Don Lemon on his show, he said that. He said there is no way that somebody would look at them and think that they were black. But they're all dressed in their black stuff, you know. And they're
too
they're,
wild and crazy
guys. You know, doing the hand signals
wild and crazy black
and so forth. And I mean, this is the police department. And this is not, you know, 1960s or 1919 or something like this. This is within the last 10 years or so.
Well, they're pretty hip. They watched the Black Klansman movie.
Probably.
Came up with an idea.
Yeah, it's up for an Academy, wasn't it? Or have they done the Academy Awards yet? It's been nominated, I think.
No, but it's been nominated.
Yeah. First time Spike Lee ever got a
As
nomination
did
for
the
something.
Green Book. Did you see the Green Book?
I have not seen it yet, but... it's apropos that it's come out in this time period this year.
Did you teach the Green Book at all?
We do talk about the Greeners, the Black AAA. and it lasted, I think you could get it till mid-60s.
It was before the triptych.
Yes, yes. And it literally, it's got a green cover. In fact, there are replicas of it at Barnes & Noble, so I think I'll get a few so I can have some in class. But it told black people who were traveling where it was safe to stop and where you should just keep going. Where can you stay as opposed to sleeping in your car? Where can you go eat? Where can you go relieve yourself? And so it gave them a sense of security and a level of safety that would not have been there if someone had not taken the time to do this. So it's you know, I know the movie came out, what, November or December, but it's, you know, we're through the Academy Awards cycle and things like that. So, and apparently it's pretty well done. It too has this crazy premise. This guy, the chauffeur is white. I think he's Italian.
Well, it was based on real events.
It's based on real events.
He was a bouncer at the Copacabana.
Where the Supremes once sat.
Possibly.
The Four Tops.
Possibly connected.
You couldn't go to the
Copacabana without meeting some wise guys.
Exactly. So, you know, this stuff is I just don't. Sometimes I just shake my head. What is the point? What do people get out of this in 2019? I mean, what is it? I mean, it's probably a silly question because, you know, we know what it is. People do this because they know it hurts other people. But now what you got here is... I can imagine all the elected officials in the United States flipping through their yearbooks or graduation party pictures or something. This is going to mushroom. And so what do you do with all those people? Who gets forgiven? Who gets a second chance?
Well, how good
under
is that?
What circumstances?
A lot of them just like to break dance poorly.
Yeah. Well, I got a story for that, too, but maybe next week. But, yeah,
When you give them a break.
Yeah, who gets a break and who doesn't? And I think that's a troubling kind of question. If George Wallace, for instance, can be rehabilitated, and Jesse Jackson do his funeral?
Well, he had one black friend.
Yeah. And
I remember they did that documentary.
Yeah, yes.
And his help aide didn't really want to... It didn't really cop to being his one black friend.
No, but, you know, who does that kind of work? It's black people. But, you know, if you can forgive...
Now you sound like Jesse Jackson, because that's what he says.
The people who take the early bus. They're the ones who take the early bus. People who turn down your bed in home hotels, do the chicken in those processing plants and stuff, they work. Most poor people work. But... if he could be rehabilitated, I argue that he was. I mean, the last couple times he ran for office, he got a large part of the black vote. He went around apologizing for all the terrible things he did. Because of Wallace, people got killed.
But the whole tragedy of Wallace, right, is he originally wasn't a racist.
The populace, yeah.
And then he said the famed N-word,
yep,
I'll
N-word
never be
out-end again.
Because you had that, it was Patterson, right? You had that really reactionary governor who was not very articulate, the one that tried, you know, wanted King to be taken out. And then that's who Wallace lost to. And then to put Wallace in perspective, not only he had a broader coalition,
yes.
he also hated hippies and said that he would run them over in his
lay down in front of my limousine.
And I remember the protest against him when he came in 68 to Detroit. And he looked up in Cobo Arena and said, you know, when it comes after November Election Day, there won't be these people in America anymore. It's like,
well, so people were killed because of people like Wallace and Patterson and Orville Faubus and stuff like that. And yet Wallace was somewhat rehabilitated or somewhat redeemed.
Redeemed. I thought that the South was religious and you could only be redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. Is this some sort of Christian notion that racists should be forgiven?
Partly, yeah. I mean, one of the most interesting things that I had, books that I had read for the Free Press, as you know, in the book critic, was a book called Mississippi Praying. And it was all about how the church was a foundation of the racism and segregation practices in the South, and that people were convinced.
Well, because they only liked the King James Version with the red letter that said God had cursed black people.
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
I had a racist uncle. I won't name him. But that, I think that's the only Bible verse he knew.
Yeah, I use that. We talk about that in my class. And, of course, now nobody goes to church anymore. But they don't know about the story. So sometimes that's a teachable moment. So I said, you know, for 5 points, go to the Bible, find out where that is. You know, what's the book, what's the verse and everything, and find out about, you know, how that supposedly is tied to slavery. So, yeah, that comes up.
Slaves obey your master.
Slaves obey, yep. Corinthians, all of St. Paul's letters, we look at that too.
And again, many have argued that the use of the church originally was to keep the black slave population in check. And then the prophetic church rose up and started looking at some of the prophets that didn't go along.
Yeah, and you know, you used to be, England didn't really have the kind of system that we have, but it used to be if you were a Christian, you'd been baptized, you couldn't be enslaved. But Virginia got rid of that in about 1650. So it was sort of like you could hide underneath that. Oh, I've been baptized a Christian and you can't enslave me. But that was off the table.
Even if it was full submersion baptism?
Well, you know, Molly Ivins once said she had been full
submersion?
Whatever.
Subversive.
12 times.
She was a full subversive as well.
12 times and she swore it did her no harm.
Yeah, never took. Never quite took.
So, you know, this is 2019. I mean, I don't know what to say. But
well, I'm still trying to figure about those two white detectives. And where were they?
They were in Louisiana.
Louisiana, mm-hmm. Going undercover.
I'll send that article to you.
Okay.
But if we could, I'm going to segue here to, we started to talk about my research. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I'm on a research sabbatical this semester. My research deals with lynching in Ohio. In Ohio. And so that's what I've been working on. And it was actually in every state. Most of the maps you see say there were none in Vermont and none in Delaware. But it was all over. And, you know, Ohio was the first state carved out of the Northwest Territory. Jefferson wrote the Northwest Ordinance. It prohibited slavery in any of those mm-hmm. areas. But people brought slaves in there anyway. And, you know, so off you went to the races.
Well, see, you know, right across the border is a slave state, Kentucky.
Yes, exactly. You know, if you go over to
Virginia, because West Virginia also was originally
Virginia, right.
A slave state, the premier slave state.
If you go to the old Rankin House and you go up to the second floor, you can see over into Kentucky. So, yeah. So it developed. And then some slave owners, when they manumitted their slaves, they came across the border to Ohio, and at least one owner bought land set them up so that they could be self-sufficient and freedom and left them in Ohio. So you see these pockets
How were they perceived by the local population?
Well, I was going to say, you see these pockets of blacks moving in, and it's very frightening to white citizens.
Yeah, so I've run into people from Delaware, city mm-hmm. of Delaware, where there seems to be small black population. One of the women said they had moved there after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
They had moved into
yes.
the North.
Worthington also. There's a little pocket, yeah, pocket of old Worthington, where there was a black church, and so you know, they're scattered all over the state. But it's funny when you look at that the black population wasn't that large at that time, and so you would think it wouldn't matter to whites; they wouldn't bother because there weren't that many. But I know in my research, one of the things I found is that the fewer black people were in some place, the more worried that the white population was about them coming there. And so, you know, they automatically close that off. That's really
sounds like
the wall.
Old-fashioned version
yes.
of there goes the neighborhood.
Yes.
It's like,
yeah,
it's really there's one black family
yeah.
now in the community. What are we going to do?
You can think of that as like the first immigration law. First time, you know, keeping people out. And then you have a state like Indiana, which made it illegal in 1848 for black people to move into it.
And had the Klan take it over in the 1920s.
It had the largest contingent of Klan north of the Mason-Dixon line in the 1920s.
And elected a pro-Klan
governor. And that kind of thing. We had at least one U.S. senator and a Supreme Court justice who had been members of the Klan. So Robert Byrd always said that he was sorry for that.
And of course, we also had President Truman's uncle was in the Klan. So there was people in and around. And then we had a guy who should have been a Klansman, Woodrow Wilson.
Oh, my God. Great.
History written lightning.
Great book that just came out. Well, not just. Maybe it's a couple years old about how it's Woodrow Wilson who segregated Washington, D.C., and he broke the black middle class that way. You know, the part of that, even now, part of what helps blacks go into the middle class is that somebody, you know, you've got a married couple and somebody works for the government. And so there was quite a black elite in D.C.
Not in the South, but in other areas of the country, the blacks to come into the federal workforce.
Yes, exactly.
And WPA mm-hmm. and Civilian Conservation Corps really led to the rise of black middle class, black working class.
Well, there was a small black elite in Washington, D.C., and it was Wilson who crashed that.
And again, you know, this was a man who was, you know, fond of Birth of a Nation.
Well, and you know, Du Bois encouraged black people to support Wilson. Wilson had a PhD in history, so Du Bois, since he had a PhD in history, thought, oh, an educated man will help us. And it turned out to be a huge mistake and very embarrassing
for very, Du Bois. Oh, very controversial in 1916 when Du Bois came out for Wilson over the Socialist Party candidate that was considered a great betrayal.
Yeah, it was.
Well, it looks like we're running out of time. I'm here with Marilyn Howard. Thanks a lot for being on the other side of the news.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay. And
we'll see you next week, maybe.
Okay. And you can figure out what's going on with blackface.
You got it.
All right. Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.